Things. All of our KBOO programs, including the evening news, are supported by our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in depth. We're looking at the slate of pro-nuclear bills making their way through the Oregon legislature.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
Good evening and welcome to the KBOO News in Depth. KBOO News in Depth provides a deeper exploration of the news. Today we are talking with Catherine Chetty, Eugene Rosalie, Lloyd Marvette, and Peter Burgell about the most recent efforts by the nuclear industry to reintroduce nuclear reactors into the state of Oregon. And this conversation is going to be led by Peter Burgell from Oregon Peace Works. We're going to be discussing current activity in the state legislature and what anti-nuclear activists are doing to fight this latest push by the lobby. Peter, Lloyd, Eugene, Kathy, welcome to the KBOO News in Depth. If you would all please go around and introduce yourselves, starting with Peter.
Yes, thank you, Emma. It's really nice to have this opportunity to speak with your listeners. I'm Peter Burgell. I was the director of the ballot measure in 1980 that set conditions for the nuclear industry to have to meet in order to be able to site a nuclear power plant. In 45 years, they have not been able to meet those conditions. The conditions are that they have a operating federal waste repository to put the nuclear waste, and that they have a vote of the people of the state of Oregon before they site any more nuclear power plants. So for 45 years, this ballot measure has prevented the nuclear industry from being able to site any nuclear power plants in Oregon because they can't meet those very simple conditions. Lloyd?
I'm Lloyd Marvette. I'm the executive director of the Oregon Conservancy Foundation and a longtime anti-nuclear activist in Oregon and a champion for protecting, along with Peter, the ballot measure that he helped enact in 1980.
Catherine?
I'm Catherine Chetty, and I am on the board of the Oregon Conservancy Foundation. And I came out to Oregon in 1977, and in 1979, joined Peter and Chuck Johnson, who were managing the campaign for setting these restrictions, the ballot measure campaign. So I was happy to be able to lend my time collecting signatures and doing things that would help to set those restrictions. And I'm happy it's lasted as long as it has. And I want to continue to protect Oregon from the threat of nuclear energy power plants.
And Eugene?
Eugene Rosalie, and I'm with Northwest Environmental Advocates. And I got involved meeting Lloyd in, I think it was 1973, and been involved ever since in the anti-nuclear movement. And now have a wide range of experience in terms of working on various energy issues as well. I worked both in the advocacy field, and also I've worked in the utility field. So,
great, thank you. Well, I think we should start by telling the telling your listeners that there are six bills in the legislature this year, and they are being sponsored by various different legislators, but they're being pushed by the nuclear industry, and they're pushing it with a great deal of energy this year. Three of the bills that are in the legislature right now would outright repeal the 1980 ballot measure law that we worked so hard to put in place and that we submitted to a vote of the people and won with 53% of the vote, despite a 22-1 spending disadvantage. That's almost unheard of in Oregon politics. The other bill, one of the other bills, carves out an exception from the provisions of the ballot measure for a nuclear power plant that would be built in Umatilla County to power a data center there for more AI. And the other two bills call for studies of the advantages, and I emphasize the word advantages because that's what it says in the bill, the advantages of nuclear power, not mentioning anything about the disadvantages, which we're going to be talking about today. So there are six bills, and we don't think any of them should pass. We are working hard to prevent them. We worked very hard in 1979 and 1980 to pass this ballot measure. And when you can pass a ballot measure despite a 22-1 spending disadvantage, it means that you've got the people on your side. So although we only had 53%, we believe that a lot more people than that supported what we were doing and just managed to buy one or another of the fallacious talking points that were brought out very strongly by the nuclear industry, and they spent a whole lot of money to do it. So with that, I think I'll pass it on to Lloyd to talk a little bit more about the ballot measure, not the ballot measure, but the bills that are in the legislature. And then I know Catherine has some things to say about that too. And then we'll talk a little bit about what's wrong with nuclear power in general.
Thanks, Peter. The two bills on studies need to be clarified a bit. One of the bills would have Oregon State University do a study, which would cover both the advantages and disadvantages of nuclear power, but the problem with the Oregon State University bill is that Oregon State University has a conflict of interest. It is a equity owner of NuScale, which is one of the small modular nuclear reactor companies in the state of Oregon. And because of that, it goes to the bias that would be involved in them, because they are because they own a part of NuScale, they would be rendering benefit if, in fact, NuScale is licensed to operate in the state of Oregon. And hopefully that's not going to happen, because we're all going to hopefully prevent the repeal of the 1980 ballot measure laws. As to the bill on putting nuclear plants in plural at Umatilla, this is a pilot project that basically allows them to put unlimited number of nuclear plants, not just one. And not only that, what they're predominantly looking to do there is power data centers. And this raises a whole nother set of economic and environmental issues, along with small modular nuclear reactors. And I find this bill to be hugely egregious, because it just opens the door for any county in the state of Oregon to do the same thing. And so I'm terribly concerned about all six of these bills, and I'm hoping that, you know, we are going to be able to put together a successful campaign involving people out there. Very much important that people get involved and preventing this from happening, because it really raises more than just the environmental and economic impacts of nuclear power. It also raises the impacts of which are ongoing right now in the development of artificial intelligence and the use of data centers to make that happen.
Catherine?
It's my belief that we wouldn't even be having this conversation in the same way if the legislatures in the state of Washington, where I spend some of my time, I own a house in Washington and am a resident of Washington. I also spend time in Oregon. And both the Washington legislature in 2019 and the Oregon legislature in 2021 passed clean electricity bills. Washington's is called the Clean Energy Transformation Act, and Oregon is the clean electricity bill. And this is in response to the climate crisis, to set in place the guidelines for each state to progressively lower emissions to where we get control of the negative impacts of the climate crisis that we're facing. And so the nuclear lobby was very strong in those legislative sessions, convincing legislators to include nuclear energy under the guise that it's non-emitting of carbon dioxide. So just because it doesn't emit carbon dioxide at the generating site, it's been deemed by the name for those bills as clean energy. And what we've seen in the last five or so years is spreading across the country, and particularly with the Department of Energy and its efforts to demonstrate to the public that it's doing something about the climate catastrophe we're all facing. Nuclear energy has now become clean. It's which is very misleading. It's not true. It's a false claim. And it also has underlying a false promise that if we bring nuclear back into Oregon, we're going to be able to lower emissions, solve the climate crisis, and get our energy needs. And a lot of people are buying into that without understanding that there is a nuclear fuel chain involved in nuclear power plants, where from mining of uranium through transporting of that uranium to be the fuel fabrication and production, then to the plants where it's used, then the decommissioning of the plants, and finally the waste that's generated, which is a major product of nuclear energy, which lasts far longer into the future and affects future generations. So there's no way that nuclear can be considered clean. But what we're finding is that reporters are writing articles that are generally from press releases of the nuclear industry calling nuclear energy clean, one of those clean energies we can use. And so it's important for people to understand that it really isn't. And nuclear power plants also release radiation routinely as part of their operations. organs. So we have radionuclides, any number of them, that affect what we've learned about the accumulation of those radionuclides in our air and water and into our bodies. There's a cancer-causing pollutant effect from nuclear power plants that undermines the claim that it's clean. So anyway, the effort on the part of the legislators to bring nuclear energy back and use it as a way to address our energy needs and climate is really not serving the public.
Thanks, Catherine. Eugene, you and I met as members of the Trojan Decommissioning Alliance in 1977. So tell us a little bit how we got to where we are, since you've been involved with it for a long time, and you were part of that effort as well as many others.
I think what happened during that time was actually raising the consciousness of Oregonians. I mean, we know that there were a lot of ballot measures that were put on to close Trojan, Oregon's only nuclear power plant, and a lot of those failed. But I think, again, is through the activism, we were able to raise the issues that when the time was right, we were able to get the majority of Oregonians to basically ban nuclear power, because essentially there is no, will never be a sort of a federal depository or a place to keep this nuclear waste that has to be kept safe for almost eternity. So again, is it's educating people, and as Catherine said, the nuclear industry with its millions and billions of dollars that it gets from the federal government is basically sending propaganda and putting over the airwaves and social media and funding other organizations to basically hype nuclear power. And I think one thing that's really interesting is when you look at it, is that now the nuclear industry is moving away from this idea that it's a solution to the climate crisis. And since they now have their buddies in the current administration, they don't want to be basically talking about climate change and how we need to build nuclear power plants for climate. Now, we don't hear about that. And what we're hearing now is, oh, we need this energy for data centers and for AI. And you know, the climate thing is now put aside because of the Trump administration. And
Catherine, tell us a little bit more why this is not a solution to climate change.
Well, one of the reasons is because of how slow it is, the amount of time it takes. We have a sense of urgency. If we don't lower emissions this decade, we're in trouble. We're already in trouble. And my understanding is that emissions have actually risen in the last 4 or 5 years as all these efforts are undertaken. And all of the money, all the funding that goes into nuclear power plants that won't be built and operating for at least a decade. The nuclear power plants, the first ones, the Vogtle plants in Georgia, which just came online after decades of not having new nuclear power plants built, turned out to be twice as expensive. So it's not affordable for the Georgia Power ratepayers, and it went 7 years over the amount of time. So when you add in the permitting, the funding, and the actual constructing of the plants, you have this 10 to 15 year time frame. And during that time, you're not applying the investment dollars in the things that we have available now: renewables, energy efficiency, conservation, demand response, strategies that support renewables to both lower emissions and supply our energy needs. And so it's called an opportunity cost by investing. And in the meantime, the investors profit, and they profit, and then we pay ultimately, because as happened in Georgia, those ratepayers are paying more now for such expensive and such a long time to wait. And in that time that we're waiting, the fossil fuel industry is happy to step up and use fossil fuels to fill in the gap. And when it comes to the data centers that are advocating this, they have kind of gone out on a limb to say they're going to commit themselves to renewable energy and lowering emissions. And suddenly they're switching to, well, yes, we're doing renewables, but we're also doing that clean nuclear energy. So they're attempting to throw everyone off of the issues of the incredible amount of electricity that they need and their impact on water usage. So they have started to be called to task for those elements in the data center evolvement. And so it's very convenient for them to point to this nuclear renaissance and say, hey, we're investing here, and that's going to serve you, when it really isn't. It's, again, a false promise for the public.
Yes, thank you. These are a bunch of the reasons why the people who are on this program today are working to oppose the six bills in the legislature. So let's talk a little bit about what we can do about those bills in the legislature and how we can oppose them. Catherine, you want to kick us off?
So I'm with the Oregon Conservancy Foundation, and we have a PDF that a document that lists all the bills and gives links to the bills and gives an outline of what we've talked about today. And so if you get in touch with us, our number is 503-637-6130. Leave a message with how we can get back to you. We can forward that on to you. And I'm also with the Stop Nuclear Work Group, which it has been meeting for a couple of years now and is organizing statewide meetings for anyone who wants to get involved and help address these bills that are coming up. We're going to need to mobilize people to contact their legislators, to contact the committee chairs, to register themselves with the Oregon Legislative it's called OLIS, and you can be notified when there are going to be hearings for these bills. We need people to submit testimony, and also just educate yourself and spread the word among your friends, your colleagues, your children, anybody who cares about this and wants to know more.
So, Eugene, you've put together on behalf of the Stop Nuclear Work Group website. Can you tell the listeners how they can get hooked up with the website?
Sure.
And what you can find there?
Yeah, the website address is just Stop Nuclear Work Group, spelled out, .org.
StopNuclearWorkGroup.org will get you in touch with that website, and on it you will find all the information that Catherine has been talking about. And so, Lloyd, I think we'll turn to you to give the last word on this, since you've probably been at this longer than any of the rest of us.
Actually, we've all been in it long, as you know. The only thing I would try and reemphasize is that the Conservancy Foundation sends out alerts that tell people when legislative hearings are happening. So again, if you call us and leave your email address, we can add you to our email list, and therefore we will do our best to let you know when each of these bills receive a hearing. And as far as the list of bills that's in a PDF. We also have a resource guide that covers a wide variety of excellent sources of information on both the economics and environmental impacts of nuclear energy. It's a PDF with links. It'll take you right to where you can get them. And so again, if you would just call us at 503-637-6130, we will do our best to make sure that you get that information and you can make yourself most effective. And one of the things also on the list of bills, Kath links to directly to the committees that are holding the hearings on these bills, so you can see who's on them. You can highly educate yourself through this material, which is available through OLIS. That's ultimately what we have in those links, but it's easy for you to get to it because it's all in one document. So I would leave it there, but the bottom line here is that the only way that we are ultimately going to protect this 1980 ballot measure law that Peter worked so hard and Chuck Johnson worked so hard to bring about is if we again stand up like the people did at the time that Three Mile Island was happening, which helped pass that bill into law. And so I highly encourage you out there, if you have time and you wish to be effective on this, you want to testify in legislative hearings, you want to write letters to the editor, you want to talk to your legislators, all that is terribly important. And please, please get involved.
Thank you, Lloyd. OLIS is the Oregon Legislative Information System. If you just Google that, O-L-I-S, you will be able to find that information that Catherine and Lloyd have been talking about as to when the bills are going to be heard and what their progress what progress is being made on them. And you'll find out who the players are. And so we want to ask you to do three things right now. We want to ask you to get hooked up with OLIS, make sure that you know what's going on. Then the second thing is to contact your senator and your representative, which you can find out by going to OLIS once again, if you don't already know them, and let them know that you do not want to see anything done to the provisions that were put in place in 1980 by the People's Voice in a ballot measure, that you do not want to see those changed, and you expect them to vote against any changes to the 1980 ballot measure provisions. And the third thing we'd like to ask you to do is to contact the heads of the Senate Energy and the House Energy Committees and tell them that you would like to see them give equal time to the opponents of nuclear weapons, or nuclear power rather, that they have already given to the pro-nuclear folks. They have twice had invited testimony to the pro-nuclear folks. So it's only fair that the anti-nuclear folks get a shot at invited testimony as well. So those three things are the things that we'd like you to do right away. And again, I'm going to ask Lloyd to give you that phone number.
Phone number for the Conservancy Foundation is 503-637-6130. And I want to add one thing to what Peter's saying. What happens when they invite the pro-nuclear people in is they give them unlimited amount of time to make their presentations. When they take testimony from the people that want to, in oral testimony, from the people that want to testify on bills, they limit that to like 3 minutes. It's like sound bites. It doesn't really give you a lot of time. And what Peter's really saying here is that they should give equal time to the experts that are involved in this issue. People like Amory Lovins and Ramana, who has written a book on this. It's just a manipulation, and it's unfortunate that it's that way. And I think the only way that that's going to change is if we demand equal treatment. And so I really do encourage you to get a hold of committee heads and ask for the equal treatment that we need in order to give legislators a full evaluation of the impacts of the nuclear fuel cycle from beginning to end.
Thank you. Thank you. You've been listening tonight to the KABU News in Depth. We've been talking with Catherine Chetty, Eugene Rosalie, Lloyd Morvet, and Peter Bergill. Thank you, all of you, for joining us tonight for KABU News in Depth.
Thank you, Emma.
Thank you, Emma.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you, KABU.
Greetings, I'm Ansa Craiglin.
And I'm Winston Watson.
And I'm Donald Clark.
And we are The Meditation.
We are listening to community radio.
KBOO
90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Dig it.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
And this coming Thursday on Words and Pictures, we're talking democracy.